This is the Quip and Quill podcast. I'm your host, Devin Rue, professional fantasy cartographer and illustrator.
Hi, yeah. So I am Matt. I am co-owner and founder of Unlimited Realms Limited. And yeah, we make Dungeon Dragons supplements as well as content that we sometimes stream. Just all kind of D&D geeky stuff. At the moment, we're just sending off our first book, which is Siren's Magnificent Walking Marketplace. I do a lot of the game design, a lot of the kind of the making things work within the D&D rules, and Dave.
My name is David. I'm co-founder of Unlimited Realms, and I like Cheetos.
That's all you need to know about Dave.
Done.
I mean, I feel I should hype Dave up a little bit more, like, because considering like Dave does a lot of the ideas and he.
Okay, I like writing Dungeons and Dragons themed content, and I like flaming hot Cheetos.
Thank you.
There you go. That's more information.
Thank you.
This is already off to a fantastic start. I'm loving it. I'm loving it.
I mean, our history of streaming chats together have not gone great, to be fair.
No? Is it because Dave doesn't talk, or...?
Oh, it was the time where you got me to agree to stream in a hot tub sometime.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. Did that ever happen?
So my argument
is... We could have gotten away with it.
The book's not
officially released yet. So,
distributing it. That's officially fucking released, dude.
No, it needs to get into
No, see, you done fucked up. You mentioned it. I had forgotten about it.
Oh, Bailey.
You need to cosplay as him in a hot tub. I would like this as a commercial-esque type of video for the book. That would be perfect. Yeah.
See, that's why it's not been done yet, because we're not ready to
do wide scale of the book. Here's the thing. You get it done beforehand, so it's ready upon release, but I want to see proof of it first.
Oh, God, no.
Yeah.
The concept almost sounds like something that AI would write, like, just randomly generated. I'm trying to think of an advertisement to sell this Dungeons & Dragons supplement.
Right.
Get in a hot tub. Paint yourself gold.
That'll work.
Yes. Just grabbing buzzwords from the ether.
Right. I mean, it doesn't have to. Have you seen some of the really bad advertisements that they used to do for like used cars? This would be perfect for that.
Oh.
I think we actually did an advertisement on that, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. We did an advertisement based on that. With a load of our artwork kind of cut out in big colourful circles and things with flashing, sale now!
See, you're halfway there! Alright, I expect something on my desk in a month.
We shall see.
Will we now?
I want people to like Unlimited Realms, not delete us from their...
I'm sorry. This is one of the punniest, goofiest, weirdest fucking games invented ever. This entire community runs on really bad puns and dad jokes. And you're trying to tell me that someone's going to delete you because you're making a bad car salesman in a hot tub painted gold commercial for a book you wrote with a character who looks like that? Sure, I fucking believe you.
It probably start its own Rule 34 community, to be honest.
Oh, God, no! Don't worry, it's bad enough that we already received fan art by one of our official artists of the characters in the book.
Let me guess, was it Elaine?
It was. It was literally a couple of weeks after her designing a couple of the character designs. They sent us in a picture, a fun modified picture of two of the characters. So,
yeah, that sounds like Elaine.
Without Elaine, we wouldn't have had sexy fish people in the book.
Right.
Oh, God.
Right. See, maybe just all fits. How dare you?
I don't know.
How dare you?
Our fish people are pretty damn sexy.
There's no such thing as too sexy when it comes to fish people.
Oh, God.
I think it's the gills.
I think it's the fins.
Definitely the fins.
Yeah.
It's the flowing kind of evening gown vibes, yeah.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, they just immediately are elegant, sort of, as they are.
So... what were we talking about? I
just saw her spiraling down this. Oh God!
That's what we were talking about.
This is a hole we're not getting out of.
Yeah.
All I see is the void.
I'm down. The problem you see, we live in England. And it's always cold. And it's always raining.
Yeah.
So it's just finding the time. That's all.
It's fine. The time. Should I just turn off the podcast now and you go do it then? Because this would be time you could have been doing it.
The problem is, I now live in a flat that has no garden, so it's out of my control. I have all the excuses. I have the excuses for days.
You could, but if I don't see something in a month, there will be repercussions.
Oh God!
I'll see what I can deliver.
Matt, I can get up Microsoft Paint and Windows Movie Maker, and I can whip something up real nice. If you want. Won't be able to tell the difference, I swear.
Right? I mean, especially if you can't tell the difference between a mouse and a bear, but yeah.
Look.
I'm looking. It looks like a bear.
Oh, you get your win.
Honestly, did you expect this to be anything else but this?
No.
All right. Good. Just want to make sure that you fully understand that it's my cat yelling at me. That it's, you know, I'm always gonna just be me all the time.
We wouldn't want it any other way.
I hope not. So for those listening, you all, so I can explain how we all know each other, you all messaged me to do the map for the book that you're currently releasing.
Yeah.
And it ended up looking very much like an in-game drawing, or in-world, excuse me, drawing that he did of his marketplace.
I mean, probably a good place to start meaning. It was... Sorry, my mind just went suddenly blank.
You got me on the edge of my seat here.
Right.
No idea which way you're going with this.
I mean, it's okay. If you want to leave those big pauses in, I will edit words in. That's all.
Oh, God, no. No!
The more awkward pauses, the...
So...
Right. Anticipate.
So, yeah, we knew we were going to do this book. we'd not do anything else. And at this time, previously... What?
Patient.
Huh?
Oh.
Sorry, continue.
You really fluffed me now, God.
Actually, what was the question?
Talking about
asked one yet. I just said how we met and that you all hired me to make a map.
Could we continue, Devon?
Oh, no, that's fine. You got it. I love listening to you fluster.
It's pretty much all I do. Yeah. No, that map, as a side note, I'll take the opportunity to send praise your way, Devon. Just,
oh, thank you.
We had ideas in our head, and then you obviously, we got the map through for you and just blew our minds, and it was, I think that was the eureka moment for us, where I'd say it was from that helped kind of really build in our heads how we were going to talk about the marketplace. Like, it really gave us the idea of having this kind of, we already knew we wanted to kind of do it in character-esque, but it really helped drive home that writing the book in character, like in that in character voice, and having each section kind of go almost glide across that map with Siren going, oh look, this is Siren, who is the for context, for those that might not know, Siren being this trickster being that the book is from the point of view of, who has created this beautiful marketplace within a walking tree, for various reasons that the book explains. But looking at the map really gave us that inspiration of having it kind of this idea of going to each section through the map, like almost like Siren's giving a tour with each section, kind of zooming in, kind of saying, oh yeah, this is this place, this is for this, and kind of almost helped build that identity that the book has. It's almost like a tour guide for a mall, but fantasy style.
Thank you. I loved it. It was one of my favorite maps to do, and I got so much free reign. You know, again, if you're gonna hire a cartographer, let them be a cartographer.
It's been like, that's one of the best bits about this job is we have ideas, we have a basis, and then being able to give that basis to you with the map, or one of our amazing artists like Elaine or Kate May and things, and just going like, go crazy, we've given you a base, what we need there to be in there, but go crazy. And I think that's what's made the book this real colourful explosion of just energy. Yeah. I love it.
Yay, I can't wait to get my copy.
We're so excited for people to see it in person, finally.
Yay. Okay, I'm fine.
The really exciting thing, I think, is there have been people who have literally just backed the project almost just to get the map, like the physical map. And yeah, it's there's been so much excitement about getting their hands on it. And just following on from what Matt said, was it before or after we had initially chatted with Ralph, Matt? That we commissioned the map.
It was about the same time, because to go into kind of a little bit of the process of how we ended up contacting you, Devon, is before the book, all we'd done is a couple of small Kickstarters. One was just a deck of like notice board postings, mm-hmm. which was our first project, and then we were lucky enough to kind of be in the right place at the right time to do a set of cards for Ginny D.
Yep.
So, you know, we had a little bit of experience with making products, and we really wanted to do our own kind of supplement, our own like thing. And it was that kind of bravado we had kind of coming off of the Ginny D project. So it's like, let's just message everyone we'd love to work with. Like, we're no one. We're two guys that both live in the countryside of England who are still very much learning our ways. And we were like, screw it. Let's just kind of contact everyone we love in the different areas that we needed. So we contacted you because obviously your stuff is awesome and, you know, very well respected in the community for good reason.
Thank you.
And we also kind of contacted a couple of artists that we knew who were known for their contributions to different different big tabletop RPGs, one of which being Ralph, who was our cover artist, who did this amazing, beautiful oil painting of the marketplace in Siren. But it was that case of we basically made a list of everyone we loved in the community and rolled the dice, and you were absolutely wonderful enough to actually contact us back.
Aww. How many people did you send out to who actually got back to you?
Some of the artists that we've got to work with include Barrett Freimer, Madeleine Nooney Barker, who's an incredible up-and-coming artist, Alexander Nenichkov, we've got Shazeb Khan, we've got Elaine and Kate that we've mentioned, we've got Joshua Clark, who's amazing. Really love the colourful style, his work there. Brian Sim, Alec Adams, it's just countless, and all of them are just so, so good, with different kinds of styles that it just gels so nicely, having a book with different aesthetics that really come to celebrate the history of D&D and the aesthetics.
So I would like to, one, talk about the process of commissioning artists and everything. And I want to specify that a lot of people end up contacting me and they're like, oh, I'm a no name, just like you said. And, you know, or I'm not this big company or whatever. You know, I know that you can totally say no if you want to. The majority of artists are not saying yes based on whether or not you're a huge company. Like, almost all of the artists that I, especially in the tabletop industry, one, we're a really small community. We fully understand that everybody in this community is kind of small potatoes comparative to, like, the whole three companies that are big in this industry. So, and the other thing is like, when you are... It's really intimidating because, you know, people that constantly are like, oh, your name is associated with like Critical Role. No, I completely understand, but I can guarantee that the majority of artists don't get asked to do projects because a lot of people are terrified to ask. They think that they're super busy. They think that they're going to say no because they're a small company or a small project. And trust me, just ask. The worst that someone can say is, I don't have the time or I don't have the ability right now. Like, they're not going to make fun of you, and, you know, they might be able to recommend somebody else for the project that would be brilliant for it if they don't personally have the time. But we're not offended by being asked by small creators at all.
Yeah, I think it can go both ways as well, to be honest. We have had people reach out to us via email or via our website, www.unlimitedwebslimited.com, we get those inquiries come through, and we do save every one of them, even if it's just putting them into like a folder in our email inbox, because we still look for artwork, we still look for artists for the next projects, and we still spend a lot of time browsing through that's why I like apple pies, so
hey. I do just quickly want to add, yeah, from our point of view, and it's something we quickly learn of, that, as you say, there's no harm in asking, and you never know when you're going to uncover someone that just perfectly fits for a project. Dave mentioned an artist, Joshua Clark, who was an artist we just stumbled upon. They had done video game stuff, but they hadn't really done as much tabletop stuff, and we just kind of stumbled across them and meshed them out of the blue, and they've ended up being one of our top artists that we will be working with again. And I think it also helps that both Dave and I come from a freelance background. I've been a freelance editor, Dave's done some freelance cinematography. That's kind of what we did before we got into the games, and that we know what it's like to be on the other end of that conversation. So just it's all about just kind of just giving it a try, and, you know, talking to people and getting to know people and making new friends.
So what advice would you give to anyone who wants to do a Kickstarter for a tabletop industry?
In terms of advice, definitely, mm-hmm. I wouldn't necessarily say start small, but do something, do your first project that's going to be relatively easy to push out. Stuff like, I mean, the way that we started it was doing products based around decks of cards. So the only thing that we were pushing out then was effectively one product, all based around one item that needed to be manufactured. So, and that in itself was just such a learning experience for us in terms of picking up new skills regarding logistics, regarding taxes, regarding freight, all of the customer support that comes as part of that. As we've been getting more successful, we have been upscaling our projects, and that's come with a lot of beautiful, beautiful products. But at the same time, there have been so many logistical issues that we have to iron out along the way, because that catalogue is expanding and you don't quite foresee just how many issues that can crop up for each element. So, yeah, I'd say keep it relatively straightforward, get that experience, and yeah, just see it go from there. That'd be my advice. I'm not sure about you, Matt.
Yeah, for me, I think that there's two parts to it. One, be realistic with your expectations, which is something that we've definitely made the mistake of not doing, I think, at times. Not that there's been anything that we can seriously complain about, but you know, you get it in your head, you're going to be like, you're going to have a Kickstarter that's going to get 5,000, 8,000 backers, and you know, you're going to be making millions and stuff. It's kind of temper your expectations for that, and that way you basically prepare yourself that build a project that can expand. So if things go well and you hit that jackpot and it goes well, you've got something that's exciting that you can expand to meet those expectations. But also, if you fall a bit short, that's not the end of the world. It's not a bad thing. You're still contributing, you're still creating, and I promise you, when you send out that product, whether it's to a couple hundred people or a couple of thousand, when you see people's reactions and responses to that, it's worth it. You're not going to care how many you've done. So it's just kind of like limit your expectations in that way. In the end, whatever you make is going to be amazing because you're making it, sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And on the flip side of that, I would also say be honest and open. One of the, I think, greatest things that we've had and that we've tried to nurture as a team, with the two of us, is be completely open with our backers, with our supporters and with our fans. Things gone wrong, what's gone wrong. For the most part, people are going to understand. And, you know, this industry is so kind of volatile, and we've, even though we've not done any projects, we've ended up kind of releasing products during some of the most volatile periods. I mean, we did it during the pandemic. We did it during OGL stuff and all that. So some of the most kind of rocky periods in the industry we've been working in, and that's meant things have gone wrong that we weren't expecting. But it's never blown up. It's never blown for faces and gone really wrong because we've been honest and upfront with everyone, and people understand. People want you to succeed. Your backers, your supporters, they want you to succeed. You just got to remember that.
That is really key for people to remember. Like, nobody pledges to a Kickstarter hoping it fails so they can just bitch at you about what you're not doing. You know, why would somebody waste the money? So, right. So just update them. Tell us what's going on. Even if it's just to say, you know, but also if whenever possible, show receipts.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, I have had a Kickstarter where somebody just literally like, oh, this happened. With like no, the amount of people that are like, how could this stuff literally keep happening month after month after month? Like, you either have the absolute worst luck on the planet or you're full of shit.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, this stuff does fucking happen. But also, like, in that case, just show your receipts. You can show parts of emails that say, yeah, no, this isn't done, or this should be done by whenever, or factory issues, shipping issues, you know, in-house issues for that matter. Things just don't always go to plan. And it's okay to be that crystal clear, that open with your backers. They'll stay. You know, they won't demand refunds. They won't, you know, try and like put like a charge back on their cards. Like, just be honest, for fuck's sake.
No, yeah, we've had people who have gotten upset about stuff, but for the vast majority, you're always going to get one or two people that are still going to be happy, and that's their prerogative. That's fair enough.
Right.
But for the most part, once we've sat down and explained to people kind of why this has happened, usually they're the ones that kind of come back and are your biggest supporter later on, because you've been honest with them.
Right. Oh yeah, I mean, there are people that are just going to immediately like, you're trying to fraud me. Like, you're trying to just steal money. Which, okay, yeah, I mean, all right. It's Kickstarter. It's kind of hard not to feel that way with a lot of things, I'm sure, but for the most part, 99% of the people are there to see you succeed. They wouldn't back you otherwise. Just have receipts.
Like, in terms of like what you get out of it, after all of the costs, after all of the Kickstarter fees, after all of the backer kit fees, after all of the taxes, after all of the freight and all that kind of stuff, this is another thing I would say. Don't expect it to be a very profitable venture.
Because right.
Because unless you're some of the big names out there that can have a huge marketing budget, or is at the real central core of the community, it is hard to make budgets stretch that far to fulfill a Kickstarter, right. And that's kind of what we did for our first Deck of Rumors project. We went with a manufacturer that was able to print the decks at a fixed cost based on no minimum. And we worked that into the tier pricing. So basically, even if we just scraped by on the threshold for fulfilling the Kickstarter, we wouldn't necessarily be in any sort of problems, because we knew we had properly accounted for each and every one of those decks. It may have completely annihilated our profits, but you're safe, basically.
Right, you're not in debt.
No, exactly. And that's the mentality that we've been having throughout these Kickstarters. We've been wanting to make sure that the backers, that the community that we love, that we want to celebrate with, why we started this company, get their rewards, and that's where we're at the minute. It's been a long road, with numerous unforeseen delays, quite a few stages, but we are getting there, and we've been very explicit with our backers, saying that we're not going to be asking you guys to back another project until we've got this one done. It is to a degree hitting us by committing to that, but we would rather show the respect that we have for our backers than ask for more money, even though you know they've not received anything yet.
Right. And Do either one of you have a business background?
No. Well, no. I think it's the easiest way to do it.
I mean, I did courses in business, and I've worked in
I never knew
marketing.
That.
Yeah, yeah.
Discovering new things about each other in my podcast.
Every day. Yeah, I mean, I have some business background. Obviously, can do like all the accounts and all that fun stuff. But in terms of starting a business before, no. This was Matt and I starting up a business because we love D&D, basically, and we want to do products that celebrate and can be used to enhance people's games, and that's pretty much just where it stemmed from.
I really don't. I have the opposite of a business background. I grew up doing acting and filmmaking, so all the creative things, and completely devoid of the kind of business stuff. But even I obviously had help from Dave, a big help, big help from Dave. But like, as long as you're not overstretching, as long as you're being sensible about things, like as Dave mentioned, like, make sure everything you're doing, you're not going to be doing anything stupid, like asking for less money than it's going to cost to make or anything like that. As long as you're being sensible in that sense, yeah, I think there's you can definitely be successful with just take it, be ready to take it in baby steps and take it one step at a time.
Also, let's talk about critique. anybody who if you're creating anything and you're releasing it to the public, whether you're doing it through Kickstarter or through a business or you're an artist, you get a lot of people who want to express their thoughts on what you've created. And I preface a lot of things, especially when it comes to artists. Yes, we have a lot of trolls. You know, we have people in the fandom who have a very strong opinion about what something should look like or be like. And those are, you have to just accept those as opinions. But when it comes to critiquing your art, you should be focusing more on people that are other artists. But that isn't the same when you are creating supplements, especially for the space. And I think it's always important to address, you know, both the good and bad parts of it. Obviously, you have a lot of people that are very like, yes, you know, want to see you succeed. How did the two of you deal with, and not take it personal for that matter, all of the, any of the negativity, if there was any, which I'm assuming there was, because life exists. Yeah.
I mean, I've definitely got some stuff to talk about from, like, game design-wise, if you're here being first, Dave.
No, I don't mind. If you want to go first.
Yeah. So, obviously, a big part of doing a supplement like this is playtesting and things. So, we were in the unique position of... we got a lot of our backers and our audience, our fans to help with the playtesting, and this is the first time I've ever done the game design for a supplement. You know, what we've done, the products we've done before didn't need game design. They were prompts and things like that, stuff that doesn't take actual game mechanics. So it was an interesting experience writing rules. So the book has new subclasses, new races, new magic items and monsters. We kind of did the whole buffet.
Right.
So, yeah. There's two sides of critiquing game design that I've learned. There is critiquing something because it doesn't work mechanically, like it's not correct, it doesn't make sense or things like that. And then which, when I got feedback from that sense, that was fine. That's the easy for me. That was fine enough. That's the easy sorry that was the easy Yeah, that was the easy feedback to take, because, you know, I want things to work. So when someone's pointing out this just doesn't mechanically work, or you've worked something out wrong here. Big one that I got at one point was barbarians can't cast spells when they're raging, and it was like, and I had a magic item that was designed to be used by to cast spells by barbarians when they're raging. So that,
right.
Yeah, that wasn't so hard to take. That's just a okay. Well, I need to go back to the drawing board. The one that's harder is the other side, I think, that you can really criticize game design in, which is the enjoyability of something and the kind of how powerful something is.
Right.
So a really good example is like this spell. How much should it have? 4d6 or 5d6 damage? You know, the stuff that's a little bit more subjective. That, I'll admit, I found a bit harder to take.
Right.
But you want to make something that's going to be enjoyable for everyone, not just for you. So for me, it's a case of seeing what people think. And I always say this is, when you get a bit of critique, don't respond to it straight away. Step back from it. So you're not given a knee-jerk reaction to something. And then usually once you've taken a step away, it kind of becomes very clear whether it's something that's worth listening to or not. That's slightly wrong. Everyone is worth listening to, but it's more how much to take the criticism on board. And for me, it kind of comes down to how much traction, how much waves it's getting. Because D&D is a game that's played by so many various people. You get so many different styles of player and things like that. You're never going to have something that's going to please everyone.
Right.
So the best way to do it is to do the old-fashioned way of just kind of by quantity of people. Like if like 6 or 7 people say they enjoy something, that's got a lot more weight than if one person said they didn't enjoy something. In the end, it's about finding that balance of what's going to please the most people.
See, we play in the same world.
Yeah.
So, and we've even played in like the same areas and everything else, because we've at one point wanted to explore areas that we would hear about their previous escapades just to have fun. So the world building part that they bug me about is so I go way deep into the weeds when it comes to world building, especially considering how long we've been playing in this world. So I have entire histories from the planet. Not everywhere, but a huge portion of the areas that we've played in. I have the planet's history and every civilization that lived in that area. So I have ruins, and if they decided to become an
archaeologist. Oh God, that see? Is hard. Fuck.
Archaeologist? There we go. Oh my God. I like how Dave's like, yeah, I'm not going to fucking help you.
No, not a chance.
I want to hear you suffer.
I mean, you guys can't even tell what a mouse looks like, so I'm not going to help you with that.
Right, well, you can't tell what a fucking bear looks like, so. Go on, Dave, go on. Anyhow. Yeah.
Anyway, archaeologists.
Yes, archaeologists. You know, if they ever made a character that was one, or, you know, an NPC, I actually have everything that they would find in a dig. and tons of information. So we actually have a huge library that we have competing libraries in different countries, and they're taking information from one library to the other, and I have hundreds of books in these libraries that they're trying desperately to see how far it goes, you know. And so they're collecting information, and they just keep hoping that I talk about it on the podcast so they can just keep adding it to their little stuff.
What sort of things do you mean? Maybe an example could
Right. Well, I'll give you an example of a book they already found.
Yeah, okay. Go on.
We actually have a... I eventually will be bringing everything over to Legend Keeper and then sharing it publicly, what they... Well, bits and pieces. I'm debating whether or not to do this because we've sort of agreed that we won't talk about certain aspects of the game publicly.
Yeah.
Because... Not only is it, I mean, it's our game and it's very personal, it's very private to us, and it's years and years and years in the making, and we've been playing in this world now for over 10 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we've been playing together for 20 years, and then, as a matter of fact, right now, my group, because it's a rather large group, we're now split into two, and one of my other players is learning to become a DM, so she took half the group, and but they're still playing in the same world, so it's sort of difficult to want to share it publicly because there are some things that were tailor-made for us and our play style and everything else, but I'm trying to figure out the best way to not share that stuff and share the stuff that's perfectly fine if I post on the internet or not, you know, and also won't make them feel like they're being their privacy is being invaded.
Yeah, no, we fair enough. That was actually actually a direct conversation I had with a couple of my players, because there's a few things in Sirens that was inspired by my home game, and that's what I said to them. Was like, I don't want to just like feel like I'm pulling stuff from your home game that's yours.
Right.
Sometimes, yeah. That stuff is like D&D campaigns can be surprisingly personal, and I think, yeah, 100% agree with. I think that's a good idea to keep those things a little bit separate.
Yeah. You know, plus the fact of, you know, my my players are hard of hearing to deaf or partially blind to fully blind. So, we have had to change mechanics or ignore mechanics on certain things. And our world is very much reflects my players. You know, it is extremely common to find people in our world that are disabled and to any level. And we have really, really rich cultures and a language that is specific to whatever we have had other people very uncomfortable in our world, which is, I mean, understandable, because if you are somebody who is normal sighted and then all of a sudden this is so not even a remote factor in a game that you're playing and your DM isn't describing what you see, then yeah, it kind of is a little bit more difficult to get used to, or a lot difficult to get used to, I should say. So, you know, we fully understand.
Yeah, I mean, it's the magic of D&D, isn't it? It's the fact that
it's
so tailored to the players and things, and it's that the fact that even the worlds that I've spent hours and hours creating have never end up being fully mine, because my players contribute so much to it when they kind of fill it with life.
Right. Oh yeah, my players world build a lot with me. We just have a lot of fun as a group creating worlds, and it's one of the reasons why this one is so very personal to us. Whenever they create a character, they create their hometown, all the NPCs in it, their family. They create full-on memories, like, you know, the first person their character kisses, or who they had a crush on, or their worst teacher, or their worst moment. You know, like, they fill in all of this stuff and make a really, really fleshed-out hometown. And if we ever go back to that area, that player becomes my temporary co-DM and basically takes our other players through the experience of their childhood, or, you know, their old stomping grounds kind of thing. And it's great because they absolutely light up. They really enjoy it. They feel like, you know, like, I made this. And they will come up with festivals and events and holidays and just really weird shit that their town is known for, or how quiet it is, or just all the little quirky things that as a DM you don't really have time to write all of that out for everybody's town, and they do, and they love it. And so they've done a lot of world building with me. So our world's really, really personal, and it's great because, you know, we get to fine tune it and have entire, every campaign or every time they create a character, they feel more connected to the world than when we add in or have tried to play like other settings. It just doesn't hit the same. But needless to say, there will be a walking marketplace. So, you know.
Yes.
They could buy the book and then they would have that information.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a good idea.
I mean, kind of looping back on, on what you said there. It's kind of what we were wanting to get across for the walking marketplace. We specifically say in the rule book that the walking marketplace by its very nature is modifiable. Like, Siren literally grows new rooms according to your needs, and it's just, we've always wanted to go into it with the mindset of this is the map of the walking marketplace as you can find it, but from here on this is now your canvas and utilize it to you and your players' needs, and really personalize it and use it as a tool, not just for your players to get on and explore, but also use it as an opportunity to further plot devices by having different types of passengers that come aboard, or maybe they use the walking marketplace and corrupt it to their needs, or something along those sorts of lines.
Sounds
so,
like something my players might do.
it's definitely like, if we do ever do like more modules like this, it's always going to be at the forefront of our mind is just how adaptable is it for other people's games. And I think that's the key element.
That's what I do with my maps. I don't want them to be any system based. I want you to be able to plunk it into whatever it is you're playing. Whatever it is you're doing. I think so many people obsess with thinking that what they're creating is so unique or unheard of that they're not going to find what they want to put in their worlds. And like a perfect example is the amount of people that will message me and ask me to make a map, and I'm like, literally, for everything that you're describing, here's a map I've already made that would fit this. And they're like, no, I want this in the map. I was like, well, that's great, but you wouldn't actually see that for the scale of the map that you're asking me to make. Take one of the maps I already have. Don't worry about it, also the expenditure if you don't really have it. Use one of the maps I already have. I offer them without any labels on it. You can add your own names. You can put it to whatever setting. It doesn't matter. It works with any system. There's nothing that they can't fit into. And if it's not something that's immediately visible on the map, then you just turn around and say, well, that's because when this map was drawn 20 years ago, this wasn't there. Like, all maps are in the past.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're just looking at an old map. Or, you know, if there is something there and your players get there and there's nothing, that's because that doesn't exist anymore. Or it was a mistake on the map, because you know what? It doesn't have to be exact.
I mean, that's the approach we try to take. This is it. Like, with our, I take our races, for example, we had one of the races in the book is the Gold Elementals. Mm-hmm. And we had a lot of questions of just like, well, what elemental plane do they come from? What, you know, in sort of, do they fit into the fire plane or do they fit in the earth plane? And that's what I've said to people is, and the way we've written it is, it's down to you, because it should fit what you're making.
Right.
Every, like, our supplementals, we just want to kind of be sort of is either a way to help add stuff to your world that you're making, or maybe a jumping off point. But like, you're never
right.
going
even if you just inspire yeah. people.
Exactly. This is the whole intention of the book is it's more than just a set of rules. It's supposed to be some inspiration.
Really sorry, my child's just come into the room, so if it gets a bit. Okay, there we go. Say bye bye. Oh no, you open the door by yourself. Look at you.
How old is your child?
He is 2.5 years old.
Okay, so there is a reason to be like, oh wow, you open the door by yourself. You're just not being.
Oh yeah, yeah. Gotcha.
Just making sure. You know, like this is a 13-year-old, like, you opened a door by yourself, I see. You know?
I'll probably be that sarcastic with him when he's older, but we'll see.
What's the point of having kids, right? If you can't be mean to them.
meanness and dad jokes. That's
right.
What it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, people, this is not condoning you to be mean to kids. Please don't be mean. Yeah. Dad jokes are fine though, please, by all means. And that is kind of being mean at times, but that's a different kind of mean.
I think it's just Dave loves being cringe. I think that's.
Do you, yeah. Dave? Do you like being cringe?
I don't like being cringe. I like the. I like the sensation of.
Cringing.
I wouldn't even say like it. It's a lesson in humility.
Mm.
Yeah. And I think that's the essence of a good story, is getting in touch with that side of you, being able to.
So you like somebody humiliating you? This sounds like a Dom part of the podcast already. But I thought we would just like ease into it. But hey, if we're here for it now,
into this.
What hot tub? What?
Yeah. Oh, see now, that's called deflection. That doesn't work in this house. So what I'm hearing is you need someone to dominate you. You need to be humiliated.
Well, speaking of role-playing, Dungeons and Dragons.
He's a perfect...
So what I do like is that you don't deny it. You're just like, let that secret out. So let's just move on to something else, right?
Gotcha. Wait, no.
You do have a safe word. Don't forget it.
Mayonnaise.
That wasn't it, but I'll take it. Apparently it is. That's going to be the new one from now on. Okay, you can say mayonnaise and I'll just not continue that line of questioning.
That's the new safe word for recording sessions. There we go.
Yes, there you go.
There's a reason it's called Dungeons and Dragons.
Right? Could you imagine how much more popular this game would have been if the dungeons part of that was BDSM?
I mean,
that's pretty much how a lot of people tried to make the game. I mean, trust me, I would know.
I'm in my experience.
You have a lot of BDSM experience?
Well, that too, but I'm talking about in-game. Come on.
Then what are you worried about with the jacuzzi? Jesus Christ.
Because we can't get the chains. They'll rust.
The chains will rust? No, it's just a jacuzzi. It's not like he's going to live in there. I mean, he might. That's up to him, but...
In fact, chlorine. the chlorine in the water.
As I made point to some good friends, it says a lot that the first big D&D game in years is so darn horny. Okay,
right. I mean, 100%.
They Larry and Studios knows what's going on with D&D. Come on, let's not be around the bush.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, Kate May was great. Yeah. So we started talking about the whole thing, and we were talking about consent, you know, when Druid is in wild shape form and blah, blah, blah. And she's like, just flat out, she's like, yeah, let's just face it. We're all monster fuckers. Okay. I mean, sure, just call us all out like that, Kate. But like, fuck, you know, like, all right, you're right.
Let's be honest. Everyone gets the monster manual and everyone makes the list.
Right. Right, we have a pass or smash for the monster manual. Absolutely.
What?
Don't act like you don't, Dave. We know. It's all right. Just admit it.
Let me suppress my feelings. I'm British. It's what I should do.
You have to admit it. Just admit it, Dave. Admitting it is the first step.
To
whatever. It doesn't really matter. Just do it, Dave. You're a monster fucker. Admit it.
Devin Rue, call me a monster fucker.
I mean, I called all of us monster fuckers, if that helps. Like, you're not alone. I didn't single you out. So we were talking about, like, artificers, and we just decided that they're the sex toy makers of D&D. Do you know that you could create an entire piece of machinery in 6 seconds as an artificer? I had one, and I was like, wow, it doesn't give me a time limit. It just says an action. You mean to fucking tell me I can make, like, essentially, like, a machine gun in, like, six... All right.
I mean, like, thermaturgy is the one that makes everything vibrate, right?
Yeah, but you'd have to keep casting that.
But could you cast it on an item that you cast, that it does it on command?
I don't know if it would be continuous. You could just... create a vibrating mechanism. I mean, you're putting together an entire eldritch cannon. You mean to tell me you can't figure out how to do it for vibrating? Like, that's got to be easy. That's got to be like the easiest part of trying to make that. Now I'm picturing an eldritch cannon that like shoots dildos at people. So.
I mean, that would be amazing.
In the middle of combat, get pinged in the head with a dildo. What the fuck?
I mean, there's no better way to completely baffle the lich you're facing.
Right?
And pelt them with dildos.
I mean, especially depending on what you make the dildos out of. You know, if they're rubbery, then it doesn't seem very effective, and it would just be for comedy reasons, but...
It reminds me of the discussion of, like, of whips in D&D.
Right.
That I had a player that complained so much that whips caused so little damage. And that's what I made the point of, like, if it caused too much damage, you'd never be able to use it in bed.
I mean, first off, I have to argue that, and so would Mr. Whippy. Oh God, what the hell is his name?
I think he's exactly the same person I am. Yes,
he's on TikTok. He does all these like little he sings songs and plays with whips. I love him. I follow him. He's great. I'm gonna ask him to comment on this for the podcast. Get a message to him. I'm gonna be like, hey, I have a question. We have a D&D question. How can you do this without causing damage?
That's the thing. You wanted to cause some damage because you want to feel it, but.
I'm just going to message him. He's the expert. So, that's it.
I'm really sorry, guys. I can't remember the name of the company. But there was recently just a Kickstarter for D&D BDSM. And ever since seeing that go live, God, it has part of me wanted to do a BDSM D&D supplement.
I am going to recommend that you don't do it unless you actually are in the community. Because I am. And as somebody who is actually in this community, the amount of complete misinformation, and I mean, a lot of us understand that things are being created in jest, or you know, or because somebody's like on the fringe of the community and think that they have a better idea. We understand to a degree, but also it makes it the community seem very different than it is in reality. Because we are all about consent. We are all about an enthusiastic yes, as I like to say, instead of just a yes. You know?
Yes.
Yes. You know?
Yes.
Yes. Oh, wait. I'm just going to go into the... Meg Ryan in You've Got Mail, Sleepless in Seattle, one of those. I don't fucking remember the movie. I didn't actually watch it. Just that part where she's in the diner moaning. That's the only one I got.
Harry Met Sally.
Harry Met Sally. See, it was one of those. Right, but there's a lot of nuances about it that, as jokingly as we want to make things in D&D, would absolutely misrepresent the community. But on the same note, the Venn diagram of people that are in BDSM and D&D is probably just a fucking circle. So there's a lot of role-playing involved. I have no doubts that you would be able to find plenty of people that are actually in the BDSM community that would be able to put together something and have it accurately represent the community in a really, really fun way.
I should correct what I said then, because that's a very good point. As someone who worked before all this tabletop role-playing stuff, someone who worked on the 50 Shades of Grey film.
There you go.
Yeah, I'm very aware.
Get me on that topic. I hate that movie.
It was one of the worst experiences of getting so angry having to work on that film. But I should rephrase. I have so many ideas for an adult D&D supplement, I should say.
There you go.
Which is a bit more with a, because there's a few more general stuff I think that would be fun.
Absolutely, and I'm 100% there for it. And not just maps, by the way. You know, I do other stuff than maps.
Don't worry.
I know. Hard to imagine, right? But I do.
But we have been having some talks about future projects. We have got ideas bubbling.
Right.
But like what we said, we don't even necessarily want to take those ideas too seriously until we've got this one done and dusted.
Right.
It's always that sort of balancing of trying to make sure that you fulfill what you've promised, and at the same time not making people feel like it's on the back burner.
That's
the situation we're in at the minute. Oh,
plus, don't both of you work full time aside from doing this?
It's definitely
so. It's hard finding that free time on top of already doing it. Yeah,
that's it. That's another thing that you don't necessarily take into account when you're doing when you're starting out, because obviously it's all fun when you come up with the concepts. It's exciting seeing the community build up and support you and get around you, and then they're not necessarily aware of how many hours it takes out of your free time each day. It's a lot of you'll always have your fair share of anxiety driven evenings when you have to be on top of certain emails, dealing with logistics that you didn't account for, or having to deal with problems that just seem so minute, but just hold up that entire process. And it's and it's hard when you have when you're trying to keep that balance of, you know, work and then doing this as a well, quote unquote hobby. it is yeah. a second job, but then also family and friends and all that kind of stuff as well. Like it will impact that. It does, and I have to work quite closely with my wife in terms of getting that balance right, basically.
I bet
it can have a strain on what you do for your social life, and yeah, that's definitely something you got to keep in mind when you decide to make the jump.
Right. You know, especially considering, you know, most people have at best like 4 to 5 hours in the evenings.
Yeah.
That they
yeah.
still have to like share if they have a partner or if they have a family, and I'd love to believe that we would all do it every single day and have that time and have family that graces us with that ability, but that's not reality unless you are live by yourself, single type of thing, and don't have friends. Because that's yeah. the only way that you do this every night, every weekend.
Conversations that me and Dave have had, especially now that Sirens is kind of finally winding down and looking forward, something that we've had to think about quite a lot, because, it takes up a lot of your life, but it is that kind of...
It's having that type of commitment. You yeah. know? And it's basically just, you know, preparing people that, you know, when you are doing this, you know, I had a someone that I know who had a Kickstarter, and it drove them to have several ulcers because, you know, the time sink involved, the endless little problems, and they're little, but they hold up so much if they're not addressed. And the socials, the marketing, then talking to backers, and just, it was a ton of tiny little things that they didn't have the time commit for and absolutely stressed out about. And I'm pretty sure they'll never do another Kickstarter again. 'Cause it actually caused them to have several ulcers.
I'm not surprised. Like it's the fact that you have everything you mentioned, as you just said, and then you get to the end of the Kickstarter and realize you've actually got to do the book, or you know, you've got to do this thing that in itself is a mammoth task. Especially when you're in like a small team as well, it's kind of like, right.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's one of the reasons why I'm developing a tarot card deck that has world building aspects about it. And I'm like, I'm doing everything I can to avoid a Kickstarter.
I will say, in it to play the kind of devil's advocate for it, is the one cool thing about the Kickstarter route is having that support of backers there, and having that team behind, feeling like you've got that team of people behind you, like it for all the stresses it is and all the time consuming it is, like the real pick me ups is when you get a backer who maybe has play tested something that you've put out there or something, or have seen some artwork that you've shared of the upcoming project or something, and hearing them get enthusiastic about it is it really can help fuel when you're at you're struggling the most for it.
Let's speak a little bit about the OGL. I think it's always important to understand all aspects of what we have to deal with as artists and creators in this community, and how decisions made by other companies that we have nothing to do with technically, as far as them being a business, still affect us. And it was pretty scary there for a lot of people when that whole thing went down, because so many people have projects wrapped up in it. And thankfully enough, again, my maps are for any system, so it didn't necessarily affect what I had already done, but it did alter two huge projects that I have that I can't talk about, that are now not going to be system specific anymore. They were originally, it's just not going to happen now.
We're in a very unique situation with it, because it obviously all happened as we were midway through doing Sirens as a Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. We were very lucky in the work, like if we're talking worst case scenario here, we were very lucky personally because we literally released our PDF of Sirens only about a week or two before the OGL stuff came out. So it was the case of there was a version that was of Sirens released beforehand, which kept us in that old kind of group of stuff that was released before the changes were made.
Right.
However, yeah. It was, I mean, it was incredibly, it was a weird situation because, you know, we're still are, but particularly then before we hadn't even done release Sirens. We were the new kids on the block, and I mean, had those changes gone through, mm-hmm. we were looking at how do we diversify future projects. But if Sirens hadn't been already kind of had that PDF released, we were in a situation which we couldn't really afford time wise money wise to change the rules, right. Because obviously that means a lot more man hours for me and Dave, and at this point we were already kind of at our limit with that. So I dread to think what could have happened.
Did it change the way that you plan to do future projects?
Yes and no. I mean, so for us, I think, for me personally, despite kind of being burnt by it, we don't want to completely devoid ourselves of D&D. D&D is still such an important thing inside our community. It's why the OGL thing mattered so much. It's such an important thing within our community, and I don't think, I know there were some people that felt that it could have been its downfall, and you know, part of you as an independent would have liked to see, you know, as an independent, I want to see more diversity in the tabletop space. Mm-hmm. I want to see more systems. I want to see more systems. I want to see more ways to play and things like that. So I really want that to come from it. And it looks like it is, hopefully. But at the but I also don't want it to take D&D away, because D&D in itself is just such an originator for this industry. It's such a way that people are brought into this. And mm-hmm. I think if D&D had either died off or there had been some sort of trying to think of the right word, but it had damaged the brand of D&D so much in that way that it unfortunately could have done, you would have had a situation where people would be coming into this space and put off by a dying D&D. And,
right.
So for us, as how we're approaching future stuff, it is that case of, we still want to support D&D. We know D&D is still what a lot of people come in on. Mm-hmm. But we also as much want to support the other systems. It's obviously going to take some time, because not only do we need to learn new systems, but we also need to get to a level of comfortability with those systems that we can write rules for them. Mm-hmm. But we have had some chats about making making free documents that allow you to convert Sirens into Pathfinder and things like that. Like, we want to make Sirens that's already out there more system agnostic. And that'll be the case for future projects as well. We want to kind of focus more on stuff that can be used across the board. Because we want as many people to be able to play our stuff as possible, just as in an egotistical way that it's fun to get as many players trying out your stuff as possible. And it's just a satisfying way to be. But on a personal level, it was particularly tough because, you know, I started playing D&D when I was like 6 or something. I was very young when I started. And I held back to the days of like AD&D and things like that, like really early editions. And that community built, that community creativity is what makes this hobby so unique. Is tabletop RPG's USP, is the fact is having so much content created by the community, being able to do anything you want. I'm glad that it's come out this way, but obviously I think we all need to remain vigilant that it remains this way. And yeah, as I said, it has definitely made us more appreciate what we're doing in the future. I mean, we have some plans. I don't want to give away too much that we haven't announced, but it's like we want to make
what?
Stuff. Nice try.
Well, you tried on me. Figured I, you know.
Well, yeah, no. Yeah. I don't know. I'll let Dave decide how much I'm allowed to talk about the future going forward. Because I just want to talk about everything. I just want to talk.
I know, that's why I asked you, not Dave.
But like, it's not just that. It's like we want to be involved in like creating new systems as well. Like, as I said, this community and this hobby is best when it has so many different ways to play and things like that. And yeah, I think it's the best thing to say before I go to say too much. Dave?
The whole incident did leave a bit of a bad taste in the mouth, just in terms of just realizing that from a company perspective, that there is a degree of vulnerability in terms of protecting your own products, in terms of looking after your own IPs and well-being, and just based on the terminology of what the new version could have entailed, the fact that they could have effectively reached into our content and almost utilized it in that sort of way was a bit unsettling. But the actions they've taken to go about that, I think, is whilst obviously we still can't forget it, I think it was the right thing for them to do, to emphasize to the community that they had made a mistake and that they are wanting to make sure that they do right by the community at the end of the day. And it was inspiring just to see how many content creators, how many other companies, how many of the core representatives of this community were so vocal, or if they weren't allowed to be vocal, they were still clearly putting the point across that they didn't necessarily agree. I think that just goes to show the strength of our community and just how special we all are. Like, at the end of the day, we are a big family, and I think that's the beauty of RPGs, is allowing people to express themselves. and with this new license, hopefully there won't be any concerns about being repressed to share your voice. And I think it's a good step.
Yeah, I also just want to actually add the other cool thing is just like to try and like be a bit more positive about the situation. I think the coolest thing it did was how much it brought the community together. The way so many other big members, big kind of businesses and also personalities within the industry, how quickly they were willing to kind of put aside differences and things, because Paizo and Cobalt Press and things like that, technically they're still competing businesses, but there was this amazing willingness to kind of come together in a way that you don't get in any other I've never really seen in any other industry to kind of find solution. I mean, when they formed the Discord to try and like from a bunch of creators to try and work out a way of making an alternative system, like even someone as small as us, we still got an invite and we still felt like we had a voice. We didn't have much to add because we were still very, very new to all this, but like it was that fact that everyone was it felt like so many people had a voice and so many people came together. And yeah, it was awesome to kind of see these people that I respect so much kind of want to say that this is worth fighting for and it's worth building something awesome out of. So yeah hopefully we can any of those people, if you want to do some work with us, let us know.
I mean, you can absolutely plug yourself without needing to like slip it in there, because I edit this, I could just remove it.
Why not? Oh,
but... bugger.
Now you tell us,
right? I mean, I thought it was obvious when we started and I said, hey, we're editing this, so it's fine. I thought you knew. Silly me.
It's
funnier that way, so we'll leave it, but yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I think one of the things that I actually really liked about it was so one of the aspects that I go into a lot when I'm giving business advice is to not put everything into what someone else does. Because the hardest thing in the world is companies come and go. D&D was owned by TSR. It got bought by, Hasbro. Like, things change whether you want it to or not, and there are business decisions made by people outside of your organization can always affect what you're doing. And that isn't to say like don't make anything specifically D&D related, but also to always keep in mind that if you can make something with other systems in mind or no systems specifically in mind, better. Because it, unfortunately, whether we like it or not, Dungeons and Dragons is owned by a major corporation, and their bottom line is to make money. That's why you have a business. That's why you have a corporation. It isn't to just make everybody happy. It is for them to make money. So if something isn't making money, they're going to do away with it.
Yeah. I mean, it's complete. Sorry.
And it sucks. But it's reality. So, if you can at any point, by all means, work with other systems. I know that everyone wants to use D&D as like to mean all tabletop RPGs. In this instance, it's not. We're specifically referring to Dungeons and Dragons. There are other systems out there that are fantastic. I recommend exploring them as much as possible. D&D is only one of but a small portion of what you can actually play in tabletop role-playing games.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Funny enough, it reminds me of a conversation I had with our mutual friend, Elaine. When we first kind of started working with Elaine, and we did our Twitch call, our Twitch interview with her, and chatting to her afterwards. And this was really, really early on in what we were doing. And she turned around to us and was like, something I ask everyone I start working with. I'm like, why are you doing this? What is your goal here? And we want to create stuff that's there for everyone, available for everyone. It's basically feeding into the community that's given us so much. So we want to kind of feed back into that and hopefully long-term wise, create space and kind of content that allows people to have an alternative from, you know, working with, I don't want to sound like I'm down on working with companies, because obviously I'm not, but like, we just want to create more space for people to make more content, whatever the way they want, essentially. As someone actually put it to me over the whole OGL thing, it was just like, you make your stuff more system agnostic. Not only are you kind of freeing yourself, but you're allowing more people to experience what you're making, and that's always a good thing.